Your name, please.
My name is Martin Luther King, Sr.
And your occupation and position in life?
Minister, pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church, Atlanta, Georgia.
Dr. King, is the concept of nonviolence still valid in today's world?
My viewpoint is, nonviolence is very much a concept today and always will be, in my opinion. It's the only way. I don't think there's any other way. We cannot win with violence in anything we never have and never will, I don't believe.
This is Viewpoint, a series of unrehearsed and personal interviews with people from all walks of life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest is the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Sr., pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. Here is today's moderator of the award-winning series Viewpoint, the Reverend Robert Libby. Mr. Libby.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Dr. Martin Luther King, Sr., and thank you for inviting us to your study here at the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. King, how did your son, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., first become acquainted with the concept of nonviolence?
Well, early in his early life, he read the life of Gandhi, and he had a great deal of respect for his philosophy of life and anything else he could find on nonviolence. He read it. He was always a student. He never ceased reading, keeping abreast with things. So I think this is where he found it. Then I think, too, although a child, he saw lots of violence as a minority people. He read of it and he saw much of it in his young life. And he was determined to lead a life of nonviolence. This is what he felt, and this is the way he lived it, and this is the way he taught it.
As a young boy, as a young man, did you talk about this as he was growing up?
Oh, yes, often. He was awfully concerned. And then he would always like to go along with me on the visits and business visits or anything that he could go, he'd go with me. And he would see so much, and he would hear, and he was very keen to listen to whatever was said and the behavior of the individual and all of this. When he was a small boy, he would often ask why most white people look so mean, that they didn't have friendly faces.
What would you tell him?
And I'd say, well, some people are made like this, son. All are not mean because they look mean. We can't always tell. But he said, but many of them are mean because I see how they act and I know how to treat me and I've seen how to treat others. And then, now he was a very small boy when he talked this way. Then when he would hear of whites beating and mistreating minorities, blacks, he would say that he must have had a mighty mean mother for him to be that mean. He was coming to grips with this all along in his young life. And a deep concern, I repeat.
But this experience of a minority person with the experience of racial hatred, how did he learn to love?
Well, in the first place, our children were taught to love, to never hate anybody, and they came up in this from a parent.
How do you teach a child to love?
Well, you teach them, and then you try to teach by examples also. We, as parents, were so close and kind and loving to our children. They never, neither of our children ever had the sense to feel that they did not have the backing of their parent, no matter what they were doing, where they were, that they know they had a strong home back of them, a home of love and peace and contentment. And this is the way we lived, and this is the way we taught them. And we're thankful that it was grasped by them, too, as we taught them. Precept and example.
What about discipline in your home? How did you deal with discipline with your children?
I was very, as I said, I was very matter of fact. I loved and was kind, and I did love and do love them. But I was positive where I needed to be. We had, my wife and I, early an agreement that we split our handling of our children. 50% was mine, 50% was hers. But if they wanted to do something, they had to have the 50% of mine and the 50% of hers. If so, you couldn't do this, you couldn't go where you wanted to go, or you just couldn't do this without both. All right, now we brought that along with us. Well, sometimes they would get a consent from the mother, but they found it a little more difficult to get by with me, and they would ask her to talk to me sometimes. Said, why you won't go talk to your daddy yourself? Oh, I just shouldn't go for the Supreme Court to go for daddy. And she would sometimes talk with me and get my consent, and some of the times they just had to face me, and sometimes I would give in. I mean, if I felt that something ought to be done, but most times I stood and just didn't move.
You think it's the role of the father to be more strict than the mother?
Oh yes, I think so. I think a real father is more strict. I think he should be. If he's a man, he can't be wavering. He could be tender, but yet positive. And that's the way I brought my children up.
What should young people be positive about?
They should be positive about the outlook on life today. And not take the way of destruction, but take the way of construction. Now, yes, you do have to have destruction. Sometimes D must go before construction, of course. But most of the thrust of young people today is destructive because they don't have the sense of direction. Now let's look at that a minute and see. They will destroy poverty, and they'll destroy it. They have nerve to go in and attempt to change this thing. They won't kill, but they'll make possible in some instances for this to happen. Now, if we could get them to see that we don't accomplish anything by burning down buildings. We don't accomplish anything by tearing up a campus or school. You're still going to need schools. You're still going to need buildings. To tear them down, you got them to build back and new ones. So you don't get it on a destructive basis. Let's look at construction more. And I hope I'm making myself clear.
Well, Dr. King, many many people that I talk to say that for many, many years, people used constructive methods of protest, nonviolent methods of protest, and didn't get anywhere. And then along came Watts, and along came Huff in Cleveland and many other places, and then things began to happen. How do you respond to that?
I respond to this. A man sees as he has the ability to see. Depends upon what he sees. I don't see this. I fail to see where we have gained anything by Watts or Cleveland or Detroit or New York of any places where young people have led to burn up property, destroy property, break it out, window panes and all of this. And I don't see where we've gained by it. Nobody's been able to point this out. What have we gained?
What, if you're advising a young person today, be the person black or white who wanted to see social progress, what advice would you give to them?
Peaceful protests. Peaceful assembly. Dramatizing to the world the evils and the wrongs of a society that's out of step. And those who deal with this, I mean, who can do something about it, whatever you want to call it, power structure, whatever, a judge, a petty jury, a grand jury, or whatever you got, all of them are human beings. And they're led on by sentiment. Now, they try to deny it, but they are.
Your son, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., is a hero in many young people's minds. Why do you think this is so?
Well, minorities, and certainly the blacks, when he started in Montgomery, all that ever started that kind of thing in the South were killed outright. They wouldn't let them get a start. They've done it in Montgomery. Or they run, or they ran from the scene. So he starts off here as a young man that won't run. Here's a young man who stands the face and tells them of their wrongs, runs the risk of losing life and everything else. So people begin to say, let's see that man that won't run. Let's see a man that's got nerve enough where they've killed him as they ever stuck their heads up before. Let's see a man that God seems to protect over against others who died. Let's see this man. Surely he must be a hero. There's something peculiar about him. Then as they got close to him, or closer to him, they found, well, my, could the man be this man? Could he be as friendly and as sociable and as down to earth as he is? There's something peculiar about this man. He must be a hero.
Did he realize that he was becoming a national figure and a world leader at that time, or was this sort of thrust upon
him? Yes, thrust upon him. He never looked at any of this. He didn't look to be high and mighty. He didn't look for any appearance on TV, or he wasn't concerned about this. All this was thrust upon him. He felt that he could get out here and do point up something to lift this veil from the face of a minority people. And all this other came in order that he didn't expect.
Dr. Martin Luther King, Sr., do you feel that a man is completely a man, or a man is completely a human being, if he does not have a religious dimension to his life? Mm-mm. Why do you say that, sir?
I don't think any man, not take the scripture for it. For me to live is Christ. To die is gain. A man lives before he dies. A man lives and he doesn't die unless he wishes to. I do not personally believe in death. I'm not going to die. Now, a man may exist without God or God's philosophy, God's teachings, but he can't live without them. Now, many people are existing but refusing to live. I'm living. I'm not existing. I'm living.
Why do you say you don't believe in death?
I don't believe in death because I am personally going to do such a good job as I can do. Every day I live, I'm going to do such a good job that no man living or dead with my capability could do a better job. And those teachings and those examples, those precepts and those behavior patterns that I carried on when I sleep will be still going on. Now, let's give a typical, practical example. I ask you, is John Kennedy dead? Or is his teachings still going on, or his statements, or his... I heard him the other morning said, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. We still need this.
Well, do you think that your
is
son...
Is Martin Luther King dead? They still, all around mail come stating, we looked upon your son as our Moses, our hero. Our little Jesus. I didn't say that. They said that. Now, this is the way they're trying to describe. I'm a better man because of his teachings and his philosophy. He's living on in people like that. He's living on in the little girl that's getting married in a few days and who says, I waited like Dr. King taught us until I was sure that I'm ready. And I went about getting the man, type of man that he taught us when he preached us about the measure of a man. Is he dead? Or is it living?
How does a person deal with grief? How do you advise a person to deal with grief? How do you deal with grief in your own life?
Well, rather if I preach to a new group, and much of my preaching today is in predominantly white congregations, I don't choose it, just happens that way. And if I haven't spoken to him before, it's good to be with you today. But let me rush to tell you, I'm not bitter. I don't hate anybody or anything. I have no prejudice in my heart against anybody. And I'm not color conscious. And I'm not. Then let me rush also to say to you, I am your brother, no matter the color of your skin or the texture of your hair or what you have in your bag or what you're wearing or your formal training or what else. I'm your brother. Now, you may want to argue it out. You may not say, you may not accept me as your brother. I'm yours. Or you might want to argue about it. You want to decide. You might want to raise the color question. That's up to you and God. I'm not going to argue it with you. I'm not going to debate it with you. I've got a job to do, and I'm going on with it. I'm your brother. I leave it for you and God to settle whether you're going to be mine. I'm not bitter, and I'm not, and I mean this.
Dr. Martin Luther King, Sr., do you feel that love is strong enough to take us as an American people over some of the great chasms?
Oh, yes, sure. Love can, those are eternal attributes. When you get to dealing with love, mercy, and justice, hope, you're dealing with eternal attributes. They're here to stay. Washington and them had them. The first folks that ever put foot on soil, they had that. This ain't new. You'd ask Washington if he'd come back to Earth today, and you'd tell him, Mr. Washington, we want you to make a speech to the world today, and you'll be heard. He just wouldn't know what you're talking about. He wouldn't know what you're talking about. If you talk about telephone, he wouldn't know what you're talking about. But you go talk about truth.
Dr. King, 50 years from now, how do you think the world and how do you think this country will remember the life and work of your son, Martin Luther King, Jr.?
Well, this is a forever thing. I hold that forever, as long as there is man, the life and philosophy of Martin Luther King will be there.
Thank you.
This firm in my soul.
Thank you very much, Dr. Martin Luther King, Sr., for inviting us here to your study at the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia, and for giving us your viewpoint.
Very glad to be with you.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview produced by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church and presented in cooperation with the National Council of Churches as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Sr., pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia.